A year has passed in Hawkins. Some normalcy has returned to the town, but old questions still linger, and new faces have appeared.
Mad Max, the new girl from California, quick to flip the bird and shred a board, is setting high scores in Dig Dug and in Lucas and Dustin's hearts.
Will is plagued with visions of a horrifying upside-down apocalypse by night, while kids at school call him Zombie Boy by day. Joyce takes him to the Hawkins lab, where he is checked out by Dr. Paul Reiser.
Mike is having a tough time adjusting to post-11 life. He's edgy, acting out, having problems at school, and maintains a lonely vigil, nightly calling out to Elle on his walkie-talkie.
Sheriff Hopper has his hands full trying to keep the truth of what happened in his town under wraps, as Barb's grief-stricken parents seek out a conspiracy-chasing investigator from Chicago to uncover what happened to their daughter. It's also revealed that he has secretly taken Eleven into his home. Their relationship has apparently progressed since last season's Stalking the Woods with Eggos. Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just watched Chapter 1 of Season 2, titled Mad Max. Titled Chapter 1 Mad Max. Bold decision, I think, of them to just call this Stranger Things 2 and start all over with the chapters. This is... It's not an anthology, but they're labeling it like it is. It's kind of weird.
Be that as it may, I thought it was fucking cool.
Yeah. No, it was a great episode.
I had high hopes, and like this thing was consistently entertaining. It was funny. It had intriguing twists and turns, and also, I mean, I was shocked at how the world became larger because they introduced this character of Eight, mm-hmm. Who's another Hawkins lab experiment running amok in the world and living a life of crime. And also that they revealed the existence of Eleven.
Yeah.
And that the relationship she has with Hopper, like, in the first episode. Like, that's... I mean, I think we debated that in a preview. We're like, that could be, like, 2, 3, 4 episodes in. Nope. Mm-hmm. That's a show that's got... that's confident in a story that it wants to tell.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how little I felt like this was indulgence in the Stranger Things vibe and how much it just continuously set up groundwork for what is obviously going to be future material.
Yeah.
Like, I expected a little bit more fan service in a different way, I guess. Was just kind of like, let's revel in these kids playing kid games and let's do these things. And
they did a little bit of that.
But it always felt like it was pushing the story forward, because even in those scenes you get like, oh, the discovery of Mad Max. Who is Mad Max?
And it also serves as a contrast between the kids that were really traumatized, Will and Mike. You know, Will, yeah, most obviously, Mike, because he is the one that grew the closest to Eleven, and then she got ripped away. Mm-hmm. And Lucas and Dustin, who have largely kind of returned to normalcy.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. I'll maybe talk about that in a little bit. But the first thing that I noticed in this cold open is I was a little bit confused, and I was a little bit like, are we sure this is Stranger Things? Did we click the wrong thing here on Netflix?
Right.
Maybe this is Steve's new life. I don't know. He could be a bank robber.
Yeah. He went from graffiti on a movie front, a marquee to robbing banks or whatever they were doing. I don't even remember. Loading stuff into a van and running from cops.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, we open it up so not like Stranger Things that I was very confused and a little bit off put, but by the end of that scene, it becomes very apparent why they did it.
Yeah.
And totally worthwhile in that we discover, okay, there, as we kind of guessed, are more kids out there like Eleven.
I'm just going
to
say
she seems
10.
To be older. Yeah. And also they have different powers, you know? I mean, Elle can like, crush people's bladders,
uh-huh,
and she can throw trucks into the air.
Uh-huh.
It seems like Eight can make people think they saw
Jedi
things they
mind
didn't.
Trick. And yeah, maybe it's just that Eight's more refined.
Could be, yeah. She's squeezing the right brain glands.
Yeah, like she doesn't need to. Because at first I thought she just ripped the tunnel roof off. Because
yeah,
I would believe she could do that, but more effective to just make the... And I was like, what kind of asshole is this cop?
Right.
Like, what are you doing? Like, the fucking roof caved in. He hit Dick, and then, like, no, he just... He Jedi mind tricked him.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I wonder if Elle will ever get there, or if this is just a result of some different power she has.
I don't know. I'm curious. And also, will she be an ally or a villain? let's talk about something more fan service-y stuff. Like, again, as a child of the 80s, I was the exact same age of these kids at the exact same time. I loved seeing Dragon's Lair. I loved seeing Dig Dug. was super cool to see, like, these arcades. My local arcade is called Dr. Feelgood's.
And it was in, oh my god!
And it was in a basement in downtown Mooresville, but I fucking loved it. And like once a week, my dad would take me over there with like $2 or $3, and we'd like play Moon Patrol or Donkey Kong or Pac-Man. And it's cool because like one of the neater things, I don't know if they still do this at PAX, has been for several years, but they had what's called the Classic Arcade, where you go into this room and they usually got the lights turned off, and it's got like 50 arcade machines on free play, and they pump in. Yeah. Like fog, so it replicates that smoky 80s arcade. Because that's the thing, like, this was the cleanest, nicest looking arcade.
Yeah,
I grew
brand
up
new.
In rural Indiana, and I'm like, where are the weirdos? Where is the chain smoking?
There was a weirdo.
Oh, that's true.
There was definitely a weirdo.
That
in
was
there.
True. They had the weirdos, he just wasn't chain smoking.
Right. Right.
Like
he was chain eating.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, what the hell was he eating?
God, I can't imagine. You don't allow somebody to eat Cheetos and play your
arcade games. There you go. I was just saying, like, at my arcade, like, dudes would take lit cigarettes and put them on the bezel where you'd put the, and there's all these burn marks, and it's so nasty.
Yeah, but Cheetos dust on your controllers.
And I'd take an army of them over a guy trying to scam a date for Nancy.
Yeah. This guy is, he doesn't have a chance. He's not going to get a date.
Yeah, do you think Will has some kind of fucking love potion? Because that's what it's going to take. Something out of Harry Potter to get Nancy in a car with you at the drive-in, dude.
Yeah.
And it's not even about your looks. It's just about, like, the
everything about you.
Yeah, man. You can't approximate a human slug and pull down Nancy Wheeler.
It's just not going to happen.
Not
going
to happen.
Maybe he could get Mad Max. Maybe he's got some mad skills.
That's
that
creepy because
she would
way underage.
Dude, I don't think this guy is that discriminating. I'll just say.
Okay, well, if you wanted to say that he's a outright like fucking child predator,
I said it about Mr. Clark.
You know
I'll
what?
Say it about this guy.
And you know what? You're wrongly maligning Mr. Clark.
Why?
Well, I mean, he has a very age appropriate relationship with a very pretty young woman. That he watches
that's
horror movies with.
True, yeah.
I don't see room in his life for little boys
for
and girls, right? But this guy, yeah, maybe you're right. I could see him bringing over a pack of wine coolers and to Mad Max. Oh God, no, I'm not even going to finish it. what else do we want to talk about?
I really like the introduction of Hopper here because it's so much like the introduction of Hopper in season one. We skipped the trailer part, the smoking, the drinking, all of that. But when he comes in the office, it is almost a shot.
Yeah.
It is almost that exact shot from season one, right down to the donuts and
but now
the office assistant, Mary, I think her name is.
Mary's making better choices for him.
She is, yeah.
She's trying to.
Apples instead of donuts.
Yeah. What do you think of this investigator from Chicago? I wrote down his Mari Bauman.
Yeah, so he seems like a crackpot. I mean, he's spouting a lot of stuff that you
but
would think is insane.
But he's a reporter for Chicago Tribune? Like, that's Richard. That's Roger Ebert's joint, man. Like, that's not a rag.
No, and we also know that he's potentially right. I mean, we know that there are other super-powered girls out there, right?
Yeah.
So
it wasn't a Russian
spy. He's not entirely insane, right, but he has maybe the wrong details.
The problem is the truth is more insane than he's probably willing to let on. Like
easily.
He's looking for chemtrails and Russian agents. He needs to be looking for fucking split-faced interdimensional beings.
Yeah, he does.
He's too grounded in reality.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of why it works, is because we know that he could be onto something, but he's still a weirdo.
So that's the thing. Is like, is he a bad guy? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, clearly we later on see the relationship between him and Barb's parents, right?
Uh-huh.
That, to me, is the only potential for him to be a bad guy, is if he is knowingly misleading or bleeding
them
dry. Yeah.
But on the other hand, if he's bleeding them dry and actually getting somewhere in the quest for truth.
Right.
I don't know. It's a bad guy.
No,
he should be reimbursed for his time.
Yeah, and I mean the real bad guy in that situation, I guess, would be Nancy, right? Because she knows the truth and she's not letting on because of the guilt she feels.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like a lot of this time, like who knows and who's talked to who? Because Will's parents seem completely in the dark about what's going on with him. Or if they're not, then why the hell aren't they cutting him more slack?
Mike's parents?
Yeah. Did I say Mike?
Okay. You said Will, which confused me.
Sorry. Okay. Mike's parents act like they're completely in the dark about what happened to him because they are like treating it like a complete mystery about him acting out.
Well, they were. He thought he lost Will, and they started to treat him a little bit differently because of that, but they don't know anything about Elle.
But what did they tell – what did the government goons that staked out their house and tore it upside down, what did they tell them that they were there for?
They said he's in trouble.
Right, but like, did they give them a story? I would like to know what the story is. No, I know they didn't.
They refused to.
But like, did Mike's mom and dad just be like, well, we're glad you're out of trouble. We can just let it go at a generic trouble.
No, this was what he got caught for. What was the thing that he got in trouble for? Graffiti in the bathroom?
There's a bunch of things. Like, honestly,
that's the story he told his parents.
Yeah, they called the FBI and the CIA because I was some pretty bad graffiti, Mom.
Yeah. I used permanent marker.
Here I sat all brokenhearted. You don't want to know the rest. I don't know, because that was a frustration. Like, who knows what? Like,
gotcha.
Obviously, you know, Joyce and Hopper, and they're working together with the lab to get Will some help, which, speaking of guys we're not sure about, Dr. Paul Reiser.
Uh-huh.
I can't trust, like, first of all, when we sat down and it said starring Paul Reiser, like, Paul fucking Reiser?
Mad about you's Paul Reiser?
Like, we haven't seen him since the 90s, and I know he doesn't look like that, but what is he going to look like? And when Paul pulled in, like, holy shit, it's Paul Reiser. I can't trust Paul Reiser in an 80s era science fiction film.
Absolutely not.
He's trying to impregnate Will with an alien.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's just a fact. That's just a fact, and he's going to study him for the corporation, and it's he's going to give up all of Hawkins for it. Like, he's just bad. He's bad, and he's talking bullshit, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously. Although he seems to be doing good work, but I'm sad for him because I know that he is going to be extraordinarily confused when he sees Elle and realizes it is not, in fact, Ripley. Because she looks exactly like him
God,
at the end of this.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Right?
Oh, my God, you're right.
So I don't know what he's going to do.
She's
but
got
it's
the Ripley hair.
Going to be surprising for him. Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, he's manning the portal. He's keeping, I guess, a handle on the Demogorgon.
Oh, he's manning the portal. He's putting the least qualified and inattentive person in the planet to watch it. Like, who?
Well, he's
whose
battling
night job is sitting in a white lab coat and monitoring this scary interdimensional portal that looks like it's trying to kill you at all times?
Yeah.
And turns their back on it and plays the music so loud that they can't hear it gurgle and fart and all alarms go off.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's
maybe pay more than $250 an hour. Maybe pay more than you're paying the creep that's creeping on Mad Max at the arcade to monitor the most important thing on the planet Earth. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Get Bob's camcorder in there. Close circuit monitor.
Get Flamethrower Guy on it.
Yeah.
Flamethrower Guy seemed like he was serious business.
Just like if we can have JFK's Eternal Flame, just have a ring. Propane's cheap, man. Immolate that thing.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. Like, it's like a drop in the dark government, deep web government budget.
It's true.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, what else do you want to talk about?
Sean Astin, Dickin' Down Joyce.
He's new, yeah.
Is this a good guy? We've been asking that. Is Bob a good guy?
I don't know. So we talked about this briefly while we were watching it. How do you think Joyce's house got fixed up? Because she clearly didn't have the money to do it, right?
I think Bob's advanced her a couple paychecks.
You think Bob did it?
Uh-huh.
Because her house is looking nice, so maybe he's...
got it all fixed up.
Maybe his electric thingamajiggies that he sells are computers or something in the 80s. Those were popular.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, he seems like a nothing
Plus
guy,
he's
too,
a,
though.
He's...
Like a, ugh, I just don't want to... He seems like the normal guy that Jonathan's talking about, right?
Right. Although...
So fucking normal, he's beyond boring.
I like to see the person talking shit about Mr. Mom. That movie is just legitimately hilarious. And Michael Keaton's a national treasure. Mm-hmm. Why you gotta hate on Mr. I saw you laughing, Will. Mr. Mom's a good time.
It is, yeah.
For all ages. Like, I saw that first time when I was like 11 years old. Hilarious. Watched it recently. Still pretty funny.
Yeah. I feel like Jonathan could have slipped a PG-13 into that stack, though.
I think that's PG-13 didn't exist until Temple of Doom.
Oh, shit.
Right. When did Temple of Doom come out? I think it was 84.
What month? Because we're in October.
Yeah. That was literally May.
Okay, so it did exist. But fuck you, Jonathan.
I mean, it was literally the first movie, and it was, probably wasn't even out on VHS at the time.
Yeah.
Because movies didn't come out quite as quickly as they did back then, but...
It's true.
So, yeah, I bet there's no, like maybe, I wonder...
So it's that or R, I guess. PG, yeah. PG or R.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel like Joyce is the type of parent that lets Will watch rated R movies. She's just trying to pretend like she does
and
it in front of Bob.
Jonathan is definitely the brother that sneaks the rated R movie.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
So,
what do you think about Mad Max? I mean, the kid.
She seemed cool.
The boys are Twitter pated by her. She seems like she's pretty feisty, pretty smart.
Yeah, I'm with Dustin. She seems awesome.
Yeah.
Haven't talked to her.
When are they going to quit creeping on her and just approach her like a human being and have a conversation? I get it. They're 12-year-old boys. That's probably not going to happen.
No, that to me, when she leaves the note for him, made her even more awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that's a defining moment is stop creeping on me.
Yeah, stop spying on me, creeps. Another anachronism. Mr. Clark's teaching evolution openly in a 1980s Indiana classroom.
Yeah, that wouldn't fly.
I remember, so this was in 93, my high school biology teacher coming to the evolution unit, also girls volleyball coach. Look, people, you know, I know some people got their thoughts, but, this book has got a unit on evolution and, we're just going to go out of the book.
Like, we're just going to go out of the book.
Just going to go out of the book. There's
I as a teacher don't approve this, but here's the book.
And like I said, like this is rural Indiana, man. There's no, Mr. Clark would be run out of town on Mad Max's skateboard if he's openly talking about the miracle of evolution that the human brain is. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right.
What's going on with the rotten pumpkins?
I don't know.
Is that Demogorgory?
It could be Demogorgory leaking into the real world.
Is that pumpkin patch warfare?
I don't think it's Eugene.
No.
That's the one thing I can almost say for certain. No human could do that to any pumpkins. Not possible.
Well, the other thing we missed in the preview our prologue, which we just like so much stuff to recap. Steve and Nancy's relationship. Steve trying to do the bullshit his way through a college admittance test, writing some kind of essay, comparing a state championship with his grandfather winning in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
How would you characterize their relationship? How would you characterize their relationship?
I think it seems mostly healthy and pleasant, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see anything weird. The only thing I don't like about it is what it's doing to Jonathan, but he doesn't seem all that bothered
by
it either.
Like, Jonathan seems like he's taken in stride. Like, okay, I'm having a conversation with Nancy, and she's trying to bring me out of my shell, and then Steve comes out and just sucks her face for 30 seconds, and, like, I was just like, oh, God, they're going to pan, and Jonathan's just going to sit there. But no, Jonathan's like, peace out.
He didn't say anything.
He's halfway down the hallway. Well, what
he could have said, like, gotta go see ya, or something. Like,
well, also, Nancy...
To me, that's just like a roll your eyes, turn around, and walk away sort of thing.
Right, that's what I'm saying, too.
But I mean, like, that to me implies that he's sort of annoyed by it.
Well, it's annoying behavior.
Gotta go see ya.
It's annoying behavior.
It is pretty annoying to just stop a conversation. I mean, Steve's pretty annoying to begin with. Unless you quote unquote love him like Nancy does.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Also,
I want to know where they got so many trapper keepers. Because everybody in that fucking hallway has what looks like legit trapper keeper.
Oh, you're saying because I'm saying in the 80s, everyone had a trapper keeper.
Absolutely. But in the production of this show, where the fuck did they get so many trapper keepers?
I bet they're still making trapper keepers.
No.
Yeah. I bet they are.
Surely not.
Trapper Keeper still has a site on mead.com.
Okay. They don't have any sweet, sweet designs, though.
I don't know, man.
They don't have any fucking triangle shooting past Jupiter. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, they're still making a Trapper Keepers. I cannot verify the sweet designs, but, they'd still being manufactured. That's amazing.
Cool.
That's amazing.
I have to say, give me one.
I liked there's just a lot of nostalgia here, like Mike trying to sort through the toys he's going to give away as punishment, and he's got the Falcon, and then, you know, swing from there right to the kind of heart string tugging, him trying to reach out to L and being so lonely.
So this toy box thing, like this toy box punishment,
yeah,
where you got to fill two boxes with toys.
Yeah.
This is the thing about the Millennium Falcon. It's such a good piece to put in the box because it takes up so much space,
but
right?
He could pay for his college in like 10 years if he holds on to that sucker.
I know. That's why it's the hardest choice he's got to make. Do I fill the box with one toy or do I put 15 tiny teddy bears in there, you know? I mean, the answer is pretty obvious. Keep the Falcon.
Yeah. I don't know, because that's the thing. Like, that seems like a kind of universal coming of age, because, like, my son's going through it right now. He just turned 11, and he's got just menagerie of... Because when he was a kid, I just, like, gathered up all of his age-inappropriate stuff and, like, just gifted it to a younger kid or took it to Goodwill or whatever. But now it's like he's to the age where he would know I'm doing that, and he would fight me on it. Like intellectually, yeah. He knows that, like, you're not going to play with this toy you played with as a six-year-old, but he's got emotional attachments to it.
Sure.
So yeah. I don't know what that's a dad play. I'm still trying to figure out, like, do I just smuggle out one piece at a time over the course of 6 months and just, you know, refresh the stock that way? kind of like, you know, boiling the frog, or do I, like, have him make the decisions himself and that's going to be a shit show? I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
If you got any stranger parents advice, right into StrangerThingsAboveMove.com.
I mean, I think the only other thing I really want to talk about is the final scene with Hopper and Elle.
Okay.
Because that's a huge development. Like we said, Elle is back. Hopper is either living out in the woods with her or just meeting her for dinners, I guess, at a designated time at 815.
See, I don't have a real good handle on what Hopper's house looks like, and he came up in the dark. So that is that his... double wide on the lake, or is that?
I think it's
like,
too dilapidated.
It looks
last
a little
time
hunting
it was in
cabin-ish.
A clear,
yeah.
It was in like a clearing too.
I agree, but I also wouldn't be shocked if they established that no, that's his house, because I'm just not that familiar
how you get
with the location.
Full grown trees. I mean, I guess he could have had them planted, but my
that's,
God,
that's Elle. She's just developing all these powers. She
maybe
can turn
so.
An oak into a 100-foot tree in 6 hours if you give her.
Can she make a TV dinner not taste shitty?
Yeah, but it makes both of her nostrils bleed. and that's for saving your friends and loved ones' lives. A couple other. I really liked the stuff that the acting that Will's doing, and I know this was probably digital, but when they show the final apocalyptic vision he gets, where essentially Progenitus from Magic the Gathering comes out of the storm clouds, they had that the hair, you could see the hair standing on the back of his neck. I thought that was super cool.
Yeah. And is it just me, or do the flashes of Upside Down look even better this year?
Oh, yeah. And they're doing this weird, like, you noticed it on the logo where they're doing this weird aging effect.
Yeah. Totally new intro.
I think they're doing that with the effects, too, because that stuff looked super cool, but they're doing some kind of pass to make it look like it's like an 80s era special, like the best 80s era special effect you've ever seen.
Yeah, I thought it looked great.
Also, we don't like that one soldier that comes in with the you know, Mylar costume and with a flamethrower. It's like, oh, looks like it's going to be a hot one. Like, is his job to just trim the...
Yeah, he's like...
Trim the verge?
I guess so. So it doesn't grow out into the real world.
Yeah. Is that like just a perpetual holocaust that we're perpetrating on the Demogorgons and they're coming for justice?
It could be.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we talked, in season one about are there more Demogorgons... than just the one that we saw. We don't really know. There seem to be other creatures as seen in this episode, but can they come through the same way the Demogorgon could? Because he, or it, rather, seemed to be able to come through pretty much wherever it wanted, as far as we can tell. So what good does it do to keep this portal clear, you know?
Yeah.
Is that helping? And would we understand if it wasn't helping?
And how do they keep the Demogorgons from making other portals? Because it seemed like last year they could come through Joyce's wallpaper, they could come through a tree log, they could come through all kinds of stuff.
The only one we know of, though, has been killed.
Right.
As far as we're aware.
I felt like the port, like, when he goes flamethrowing, the things kind of, like, made a shrieking noise and moved as if, like, that there's some kind of intelligence or will behind that. Maybe it's just a reflex action. I don't know.
Could be.
Other 80s nostalgia, I loved Barb's parents' house. The wallpaper, the wicker-backed dining room furniture.
Yep.
It's just so good. The bathroom. The bathroom. Oh, man. It's just the best. Mm-hmm. What is Lucas and Dustin's plan? They mentioned they're talking about they have a plan. They got to stick to the plan. It's something about stalking Mad Max.
Yeah.
But
that was before the arcade, right?
Was it?
I think
because I thought they were riding home and trying to tell Mike that they'd found her.
Right.
And Mike's like, fuck off. And they're like, well, he's not in. He's like, well, we stick to the plan. And like, it's not a dictatorship. And
yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's been revealed yet.
All right. Well, I don't have much more to say.
My one remaining question is I want to know what electronic thingamajiggies Sean Astin is selling.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll find out.
He's selling Casio calculator watches.
Yeah.
They're all the rage.
Those, I mean, he should be handing them out to the kids so they can show the school like
what
they're missing.
First one's free.
Yeah.
If you want to store up to 10 phone numbers.
Right.
If you want to calculate
three-digit math problems.
Up to eight math. Oh, no, you could get boobless out of that, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, for sure.
Then you come see if you want a semi-perpetual calendar that's not Y2K compliant. Come see Sean Astin.
Nobody was thinking about Y2K at this point.
Literally.
Nobody.
No fucking programmer was, that's for sure.
Nobody was. They scrambled in 1997.
Until they sobered up in the late 90s. Holy shit, what were we doing? We didn't have nearly enough bits to keep track. We didn't think this computer thing was going to work out. There's going to be a flash to pan. We're going to go right back to Abacus's.
Abacus's. That's the proper one, yep.
Those are Stranger Things. I don't know how to work them.
All right. Well, that's episode one, I
think. Back to the Stranger Things salt mines.
Yeah.
On our marathon. We're going to try to get two done today and then do three each day this weekend, again, to have complete coverage before the end of the weekend.
I made a supercut of Stranger Things season one. I want to talk about it real quick. It's on YouTube. If you search for Shouting Things, you'll find it on YouTube. It's a supercut of all the characters in Stranger Things shouting the names of other characters and some other stuff, which made it funnier. Go to YouTube and check it out.
How we want to do, because the other thing is we got a decent amount of feedback in between last year's preview, and should we like maybe take a little bit of that like at the end of each day's?
I thought we were going to do
but a lot of this stuff is probably not going to be relevant by the time you get to season two wrap up.
Well, that's the nature of it.
Yeah.
I guess watch the whole thing and then send us feedback.
I do think maybe I could cherry pick some relevant feedback from like, because it looks like we're going to do 3-3-3. Like if I can pick through the ones up to like episode 3 to consider
if you want to.
The end of today.
Sure.
To kind of keep it from getting completely jacked up. But all right. Well, again, can't wait to get back to it. So that's what we're going to do now. StrangerThings@baldmove.com if you want to leave feedback. For sure, for the season 2 wrap up, we'll be doing next week or the week after. But yeah, we got to get back to it.